In Northern Ireland, May 1981, Detective Sean Duffy stands over a body in a burnt-out car. The troubles are at their peak. Bobby Sands is dying on hunger strike in the Mays prison, while the world focuses on Lady Diana's wedding preparations. As a Catholic cop in the predominantly Protestant Royal Ulster Constabulary, Duffy walks a dangerous line every day. What appears to be a standard paramilitary execution has one disturbing detail, a severed hand placed on the accelerator. When forensic pathologist Dr. Laura Cathcart reveals the hand belongs to someone else, likely a 60-year-old guitarist, and finds a rolled-up musical score from Puccini's La Bohème hidden in the victim's body, Duffy realizes this is no ordinary killing. The morning ritual of checking under his car for mercury tilt bombs is as routine as brushing his teeth in a place where police officers are prime targets. Every bump during his drive triggers waves of panic as he imagines the deadly physics of a mercury switch completing its circuit. When a second body appears, Andrew Young, a 60-year-old music teacher, executed with his hand cut off and replaced with the first victim's hand, the case becomes even more perplexing. The musical score contains the lyrics, "Your little hand is freezing, let me warm it for you," a macabre reference to the severed hands. This attention to detail suggests they're dealing with a calculated killer rather than typical paramilitary violence. Duffy receives a postcard. "I found out your name, Duffy. Perhaps we are opposites who share the path through the labyrinth. Do not let them say that I hate queers. I do not hate them. I pity them. My task is merely to free them from this world." During a case conference, Duffy presents his theory that they're facing Northern Ireland's first non-sectarian serial killer. A careful, intelligent sociopath who's personally charming with considerable charisma. Chief Inspector Brennan remains skeptical, preferring to believe it's just another paramilitary hit disguised as something more complex. The investigation takes an unexpected turn with the apparent suicide of Lucy Moore, found hanging in Woodburn Forest. Dr. Cathcart discovers Lucy had given birth about a week before her death and had breastfed for 2 days before stopping. This initially suggests why she might have killed herself, a sadly common story in Ireland where abortion was illegal. However, a thumb-shaped bruise on Lucy's neck indicates possible murder disguised as suicide. Lucy's ex-husband, Seamus Moore, an IRA hunger striker, shows no concern about her death or pregnancy, calling her a silly bint and claiming they were divorced. Her parents know nothing about her pregnancy or whereabouts during the past 6 months. The connection between Lucy's case and the murders remains elusive until Duffy examines letters she supposedly sent from Dublin. Under UV light, an S appears in the corner of one envelope, likely the first letter of a return address connecting to two suspects, Freddie Scavani and Shane Davidson. Duffy uncovers that the first victim, Tommy Little, was far more significant than his deliberately understated official file suggested. Through a tense conversation with Tommy's boyfriend, Walter Hayes, Duffy learns Tommy had mentioned an urgent meeting with Billy White regarding the rackets, protection money, and extortion schemes. Later that evening, a mysterious phone call had Tommy rushing to Freddie Scavani's house. Billy White emerges as a fascinating figure, a UVF divisional commander who transformed himself into a shrewd operator managing weapons acquisition and distribution. Freddie Scavani presents an equally intriguing profile, an Italian-born intellectual in the upper echelons of Sinn Féin. When questioned about Lucy Moore, his dismissive reference to her as the wee doll who topped herself betrays both contempt and possibly guilty knowledge. The investigation's critical turning point arrives when Duffy learns Tommy Little was head of the IRA's Force Research Unit, FRU, an elite internal security division that rooted out informers within the Republican movement. As Billy White astutely observes, anybody who killed Tommy would have to be a nutcase, not just because of Tommy's connections, but because the FRU's retribution would be devastating. After being officially removed from the case by Special Branch, a move that came with thinly veiled threats, Duffy continues investigating unofficially. The breakthrough comes during a casual conversation when he realizes Freddie Scavone's home backs onto Woodburn Forest, where Lucy's body was found. Breaking into Scavone's fortified tower house proves challenging. Triple-locked doors, reinforced windows, and a sophisticated alarm system. Despite their thoroughness, they find nothing overtly incriminating, though the house's sterile perfection feels staged. Their real discovery comes in the dense woods behind Scavone's property, a burnt-out Ford Granada professionally stripped of identifying features, but almost certainly Tommy Little's vehicle. When confronted at gunpoint, Scavone remains remarkably composed. He makes one phone call to a London number, setting in motion events that reach the highest levels of government. Duffy finds himself speaking directly with William Whitelaw, the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland. The shocking truth? Scavone is Steak Knife, not just another player in the Troubles, but a high-level British intelligence asset embedded deep within the IRA's internal security unit. Duffy confronts Freddy at his Mediterranean hideaway in Italy, where the horrific truth emerges. Lucy had lived with Freddy during her pregnancy while he sent fake letters from Dublin to her family. After their daughter's birth, Freddy abandoned the infant at a hospital. When Lucy became depressed about losing her baby, Freddy struck her during an argument. While he was away, Lucy discovered evidence proving Freddy was an MI5 informer, codenamed Steak Knife. She contacted Tommy Little, Freddy's IRA commander. Returning to find them with the incriminating documents, Freddy shot Tommy, then strangled Lucy. With limited time before the IRA would search for their missing commander, Freddy crafted an elaborate plan. He staged Tommy's death as part of a pattern targeting gay men, hung Lucy's body in the woods to appear as suicide, and selected Andrew Young as his second victim, a gay target to reinforce his fictional narrative of a homophobic killer in Belfast. In a violent confrontation, Duffy shoots Freddy and seizes a tape from his MI5 surveillance equipment. Upon returning to Northern Ireland, intelligence officers subject Duffy to a mock execution to break his spirit, chillingly revealing that they had decided to spare his life. Standing on Knocka Mountain, Duffy gazes at Belfast spread below like a great slab of meat in a butcher's yard. The devastating truth? There was never a gay serial killer. The murders were a cover-up to protect a high-level British intelligence asset who exploited societal prejudices. The labyrinth metaphor culminates. Duffy has confronted the monster, but escaping proves equally dangerous. The truth he carries is too explosive. It could shatter the power balance and cost him his life. Throughout this journey, Duffy's character stands as a beacon of integrity. In a society fractured by sectarian violence and political manipulation, he represents the possibility of transcending tribal loyalties for a greater good, a thin blue line between order and chaos in a land where truth remains as elusive as peace.